live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna DeVlantis, here on WGN. All right, hey, I'm taking bets. Ryan, listen up here.
Okay.
How long before Rod Blagojevich is back in the public spotlight? And I mean back. Get out there. He's doing something public. He's giving a news conference. He's out there.
I'm thinking that the first move will be the Twitter handle, right?
Yeah, I bet was Twitter even around? I mean, barely. 8 years ago, I guess it was.
Yeah, but I think something was set up for him, but I don't know if he was active on it.
Imagine
him
on social media.
Yeah. Boy. Lots of hashtags going on there.
Woo! That's going to get interesting.
Yeah, I have a feeling that he will be in the presence of media very, very soon in one form or another, whether it be banging on the door trying to get interviews or on a book tour. Who knows?
On the show yesterday, we talked about this. What do you think is next for Rod Blagojevich? What do you think he will do? What do you think he should do? A lot of people, I was surprised by this, a lot of people think he will run for office again. He can only run for federal office. We know that. Did you see the Onion headline, though, today?
No.
Rod Blagojevich, somehow already governor of Illinois again, minutes after prison release. That cannot happen. We know that. He cannot hold office in the state of Illinois.
Well, and we don't know if he can vote. He didn't even know if he could vote coming up in November because he was asked that if he's going to vote for Donald Trump. And he said he would if he could, but he doesn't know if he can.
That'd be a fascinating situation, though. What if you can, because I guess he could run for president or run for a federal office, but you can't vote?
Yeah, that would be a little weird.
Very strange situation there. But anyway, he won't be in the state of Illinois. We know that. When they impeached him, they put that language in, so he can't hold office here.
An Uber driver. What do you think?
You know?
Jumping in that car?
He'd be talking to people, kind of doing his thing.
Yeah.
His poetry, maybe. Reciting poetry or history, giving history lessons.
I know exactly where that is, where you want me to take you. I cut the ribbon there.
It's so, exactly. He would know his way around. He'd know the shortcuts, too, I bet. I've chased him down alleys before. I bet he would even be able to take those little back routes, and get you there faster. He'd be good at that. I said this yesterday. I think, honestly, if he is repentant and he feels as if he can do good in this world, and he kind of hinted at it yesterday when he was out in front of his Ravenswood Manor home, he said he wants to do something for criminal justice reform. I think he could be a good voice in that area. It depends on how he does it.
I don't know if he's going to be repentant, though.
Yeah, we haven't seen that yet.
No.
There's no remorse. There's none of that. But if he focuses on criminal justice reform, that could be. I mean, look, people deserve second chances in life. I believe that. And I think he could do good. He could. However, he did stop by Fox News last night. I don't know if you saw that. This is interesting because let's play a little bit of it. See what you think, because I think there was a very important reason why he was on Fox News yesterday. And when you hear this, I think you'll see that, too.
Well, I absolutely am. My wife and I, my two daughters, were all very grateful to President Trump. As I said earlier today, he didn't have to do this. I was a Democratic governor, and he's a Republican president, and what he did for me today doesn't help him at all politically. But President Trump is very different, and he's very different from many of his predecessors. This is a president who not only solves problems, but he actually is fighting to bring about the change that the American people have been hungering for years. We were promised that change. This is a president that's actually doing it. The fact that he gets so much pushback is proof positive he's keeping his promises, where perhaps others who promised change didn't do that.
Seemed like a public thank you to the president, and he knows that the president watches Fox, right? And so that seems like the perfect place to go if you wanted to get that message out to the president. That was my take on the thing. When I saw his interview, it did seem like it was mostly about kind of just saying, thanks to President Trump.
The one thing that I wanted to ask him, and unfortunately he was shuffled away before he would take any questions. We don't know if that was planned. I'm guessing so. But have you spoken with the president at all? Have you spoken either before your release or after your release? What have been the lines of communication there? How did this kind of come to be? And do you plan to continue to communicate with the president? I mean, if they're just doing this via, interviews, that's one thing. But you've got to believe there were some kind of back channels going on.
You would have to believe. But then we talked to his attorney yesterday, who was handling the appellate case. And who was with the family yesterday there in Ravenswood for that news conference and has been with them all the way, said he was surprised by it. And then you heard Rod Blagojevich say he had no warning about it until one of the inmates said that they saw it on TV at the prison. So you wonder if this was just sort of the decision was just made.
A little behind the curtain stuff going on, by the way. So I was out there at the house yesterday, and of course, mm-hmm. you know, everyone started leaving, and all the neighbors went back into their homes, and you know, the TV reporters filed their reports and everything like that. I was sitting in the car filing my reports, and I did notice a TV crew go up and knock on the door, and they got let in. So I bet that's what it. I bet it was that Fox crew then.
Oh,
because it was about an hour after everything had cleared out there. There were still some cameras, some people around, but I did notice a crew kind of walk up, knock on the door, and the door opened, and they went in.
Since you were covering it, Ryan, were you surprised? I was surprised that he cut that news conference short, and then he didn't really field many questions. No one else in the family spoke. None of the other attorneys spoke. It was just sort of like, that's what I have to say, and I'm done, which gave me a bit of an indication that he's going to go away for a little bit. And maybe it's a month, maybe it's a week, I don't know, but that he's going to sort of retreat for a little bit before he comes back out. It didn't seem like he wanted that to continue.
I got to tell you, I feel awful, but I feel like I was so distracted by the bloody chin. I mean, it was so difficult. He was, you know, he had cut himself shaving, and it was just, it was hard to watch because you would watch it kind of like, oh no, it's going to drip. And then his wife would say, well, do it now. And he's like, and he'd dab it and he'd keep talking. But I was so focused on the bloody chin. It was awful, I know.
Channel 9's Ben Bradley made the comment, and I saw him on Twitter. He said that he apologized for his bleeding chin, but nothing else.
That's
sort of the takeaway he had on the whole thing. That's what it is. That's what happened.
Bleeding all over Ronnie Woo Woo, who was there.
Yeah, we have to say very quickly, happy birthday, Tom Skilling, because that's today. So he's celebrating a birthday today. Give a shout out to Tom. We are going to talk to Chuck Gowdy from ABC7, investigative reporter. He's coming up here on the show. He, as you may know, sat next to the governor on his way back from prison, from Denver to O'Hare, I believe, after he was let out of the Littleton, Colorado federal prison. Chuck sat next to him. As luck would have it, probably wasn't luck. Knowing Chuck, there was a lot more to it, but he's going to tell us maybe what his take is on what he thinks after spending that kind of time with former Governor Rod Blagojevich, what he thinks he might be thinking for the road ahead. We'll talk with Chuck coming up here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here, WGN 118 is the time, 815. I wouldn't be surprised if Blago got a job in the White House next. I don't know. Maybe that's what he's trying to do. His next step is next move is anyone's guess. But I hear somebody we're going to talk to next who might have some insights into Rod Blagojevich, what he's thinking right now. Because we were talking about on the show yesterday, what is next for Rod Blagojevich, what he will do, what he should do. And some of you said, of course, he's going to be in the limelight. Some said he should just sit back and go fishing, spend some time with his family. Gosh, after 8 years in prison, wouldn't you want to do that? I guess. I don't know. We'll have to see what he does. My favorite suggestion was televangelist. Someone said he'd be a great televangelist. But again, we want to talk to Chuck Gowdy, ABC 7 investigative reporter, one of the most respected investigative reporters in the U.S., in my opinion. And he was there next to him. You saw him sitting next to Rod Blagojevich on his trip home from the federal prison, the Denver to O'Hare flight. And Chuck, we all saw you there, spending that time with the governor. Thanks for coming on WGN. Appreciate it.
Quality time, Anna.
I bet. I mean, let me just ask, let's just back up. What did he say when he first saw you? He knows who you are. He knows you're an investigative reporter, and you don't exactly ask simple questions. What did he say?
Well, I first saw him in the terminal when he was waiting to board. So we had a conversation there, did a little interview, and I think he had expected that I would be there. There were obviously other television reporters from Chicago who were there at the same time in the terminal. And so it was not much of a surprise that I would be there. He was a little taken aback when he realized that I was sitting next to him. I told him that things had come full circle because we had a similar seating situation when he was taking himself out to prison 8 years ago.
I remember that. You were sitting next to him then.
So it was, we were bookending his prison time.
So was he okay with it? Did he start talking
yeah.
with you? Did he try to avoid questions?
No, not at all. He was gracious, and if you didn't know it was Rod Blagojevich, you would just think it was two businessmen traveling together on a flight. We talked the entire time. When I say we, he talked 80% of it. which is not unusual for Blagojevich. You ask a question and you get a series of answers. But it was very congenial. It was informative. It was entertaining. It ranged from very serious matters about his legal situation and his opinion on the criminal justice system and federal prosecutors, scale all the way back to the things that he, you know, misses in Chicago and hopes to be able to do when he arrives home, from the Cubs to the Bears. He was curious whether Mitch Trubisky is the real thing for the Bears or whether they should go after somebody else. I mean, you know, he really is an eclectic person and always has been. And whether he would just go off into the sunset, as you were talking about a minute ago, I mean, that is not in his DNA.
Uh-huh. That's what you think, and that's the sense you got.
I would say that even if he was still locked up, that at whatever point Rod Blagojevich gets freedom, he's going to be back at it.
So do you think that involves something political in his future? Do you think, and his restrictions here we just stated, but he can't run for office in the state of Illinois. He has other options federally. He could run, for Congress again, right?
Or even right, president. He could. He's a political animal. That's all he's known. Even when he was in prison, his favorite job was to teach history and government, and so he tried to keep his hand in that. He's obviously very astute when it comes to politics. Has held numerous offices. As you know, he fashioned himself as president of the United States. I mean, that was his end game all along.
Right.
He carried himself that way. He saw himself that way at some point. He saw himself coming out of the mold of Bill Clinton and wasn't afraid to talk about that.
Well, and that was part of what some say might have gotten him in trouble, the way he talked on those tapes about, I'm stuck here, I got to get something going on in my life. And he's governor of the state of Illinois, and most people would think that's something going on in your life. It just was sort of baffling, but I think it speaks to that point that you just raised, that he did plan to go very high in politics. President was definitely in his sights, and even when you saw some jealousy come out when Barack Obama made it that far, was coming up in the ranks, that there was some, you know, competition there.
When we were investigating his overuse of the state police security detail when he was still governor, and he would travel with, you know, a huge contingent of armed guards from the state police, there's a great story that he went to Washington, D.C. for a meeting, and his security detail, of course, entered the room to sweep it ahead of time before he got there, and people thought that the president was about to come in. And it was Rod Blagojevich.
Wow. You know, the other thing, the details you reported, Chuck Gowdy, for ABC7 the other night, if people missed it, there was some fascinating details of just about being with someone, and in this case, the former governor, Rod Blagojevich, but being with someone who's been in prison for 8 years, and you're getting on a plane, and you think about how life has changed in that period of time. You start out, one of the pieces I saw online that says, in prison, there is no bar cart, and you go through to talk about the cocktails were coming, but he didn't order one.
No, he didn't. It was a little bit surprising because he certainly has never been a teetotaler, but when you're in prison, you have no choice. And so when the flight attendants came around, I figured that he would order something, even if it was just a white wine. And he asked for cranapple juice, and I asked him why, and he said because he hadn't taken a drop of alcohol, couldn't, in 8 years, and if he did, his behavior on the plane would become a news story.
Oh, well, I guess that's something to watch out for, I suppose. Did you get his state of mind? Was it just kind of, was there relief? What would you say stood out the most to you, just hanging with him at the moment when he first maybe felt like he could breathe again?
It was relief, I think, and a little bit of confusion, as you would expect. I mean, this is somebody who has been in prison as the world has passed by for the last 8 years, doesn't have a cell phone, doesn't have a current Illinois driver's license, doesn't really know what things will look like when he arrives back at home in Ravenswood. He hasn't been there in years. His kids are now grown. His wife has held down the ship while he's been gone. And so he was a little bit, he had a little deer in the headlights going, but he was still Rod Blagojevich, and Rod Blagojevich is able to carry on a conversation with no notes for a long time and tell you what he thinks.
Yeah, and were you impressed by that? Were you surprised by that, that after 8 years? I think, to me, it seemed as if the same Rod Blagojevich emerged from prison that much longer, and I'm not sure I expected that. I mean, he has the white hair, he looks different, certainly, but he sounded exactly the same.
You know, we have interviewed a lot of prisoners on their way out of jail after serving time over the years, and most of them do emerge in a different frame of mind. They come out different than they went in, and that doesn't seem to be the case with Rod Blagojevich. He sounds the same, and so that is surprising, because prison normally changes people. It's intended to. And that's why they call them correctional institutions. But he appears to have been somebody who has become firmer in his thoughts and beliefs, and that they've actually evolved. And his thoughts about the way federal prosecutors came after him and the case against him and all of the things that went into that, he seems to be really entrenched in those ideas and is trying to figure out now how to put that into some practice and, potentially start a crusade to try to change things as he thinks they should be.
He referred to himself as a political prisoner. In fact, he lashed out at prosecutors and the whole system. Then he moved on to talk about criminal justice reform, talked about how minorities don't get a fair shake, poor people don't get a fair shake, those are important things to change in our society. And it seemed, it seemed heartfelt to me listening to him there. I just wonder, do you think, Chuck, from what you've just spending a little time with him, doing the background you've done and the amount of coverage of him you've done over time, do you believe he's sincere in that sort of that vision he has for moving his life in that direction and helping people in that circumstance?
Well, at least for the moment, you have to take him at face value until there's some reason not to. He still is speaking from the position as a convicted criminal. He's an ex-con. He's a felon. He was accused of convicted of not only lying but doing a whole host of other things. And so that kind of context, I think, has to be taken into account as well.
Do you think he'll be giving interviews now, Chuck?
Well, he did a couple of interviews yesterday, including, one with us. He was on Fox News last night, and largely saying the same thing. I guess one thing that did surprise me is that numerous times during our conversation, he kept saying to me, wait until my news conference at 11 o'clock in the morning in front of my house, because I'm going to have new things to say. I'm going to lay all this out. I'm going to tie up all the loose ends. And that didn't happen. I mean, there was virtually no structure to it, and it really was just repetition of what we heard at the Denver airport the night before.
Yeah, it was amazing work, and I saw Rob Feeder cover you as well, the media, longtime media critic here in Chicago, giving you props for scoring the seat, the golden seat, he called it, next to
that was boys. Very nice. That was a well-turned phrase there, the golden seat.
It was perfect, and he also asked you how you pulled it off, and you said it was really reporting 101, and then he said that it sounded a bit like a magician reluctant to reveal his secret when you said that, because not everybody got on that plane, Chuck, but you did, and that's what we've come to expect of you. Thank you for weighing in here. Thanks for coming on with me on WGN.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Chuck Gowdy from ABC7 there. He was on the plane with Blagojevich, had some time to spend with him there and get his thoughts, figure out his state of mind. Interesting stuff. Coming up on the show, whether you saw the Democratic debate or not, Bloomberg, he was hammered. We're going to talk about one of the things that came up, because it was a policy that used to be in place here in Chicago.
And when you say he was hammered, he was beaten up.
I know.
Wasn't.
I should clarify that, because we were just talking about Blagojevich on the plane refusing to get hammered. He took cranberry juice. He did not get a cocktail, but he was beaten up. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Very much beaten up. A couple things that came up were police issues, and Sergeant Pete will be here to break down that coming up here on WGN. Sergeant Pete is here, 38 years, a Chicago cop. We've got to talk about the Democratic debates, too. That's coming up on the show. Piece of that kind of stems into what's going on here in Chicago and policing in general, and changes that have been made over the years. So everyone came out swinging at Bloomberg last night, and he did not do well. Ouch. It was pretty rough to watch at one point. And he basically, you know, his staffers were forced to say afterwards, he's just warming up, guys. Don't worry. He's just warming up. I'm like, oh, that's not good. That's never good, is it, Steve Bertrand?
I think he was out somewhere today and he said, so how was your night last night?
Oh.
So acknowledging the fact that it did not go well for him. I when Elizabeth Warren opened up with that horse-faced lesbian comment and said that wasn't Donald Trump, that was Michael Bloomberg, that had to be a body blow within the first minute.
I think we have that in case people missed that. We were going to play it late. Oh, no, we'll get to that in a second. But it was a body blow, and it was right out of the gates, right? She came right out just swinging about what he's called women and these horrible terms that have been attached to him in these lawsuits, and then the non-disclosures, how many have you signed, why won't you release them from them, why not, what are you afraid of, oh my gosh. And he just sort of stood there, and I wondered if that's what he went in there thinking. I just kind of want to not fall into it by opening my mouth. I didn't understand the strategy there. He didn't really talk or defend himself.
He tried to, it was almost like the possum defense. You know, he just stood there and didn't move for the longest time. But that didn't work. Now, I didn't watch the end of it, but I'm told that once they got, you know, into the third or the second hour, that he became much more aggressive and picked up from then. But in the beginning, it was rough.
It was rough, and it was uncomfortable to watch as you saw them really taking aim. But, of course, he surged in the polls, which brought him into second place, landing him on the stage there in Nevada. And the others who are falling in third, fourth, and fifth, they sort of were fighting for their political lives to say, we have to stay relevant. This guy's got a ton of money. We're not going to be able to beat him down the stretch that way, and we really need to sort of weaken him here. So you could feel all that happening on stage. One of the things they went after him for, which isn't making the headlines that the things that we just talked about are, is he also was beaten up for his policies, his police policies, specifically stop and frisk, a policy that he was underway there in New York when he was the mayor. It was utilized, and he credited with bringing crime down. It's a policy that Bloomberg has since apologized for. Said he was wrong to do it. It's just there was a different time. We've all made mistakes. He's apologized again and again, but they did bring it up last night.
This is how you describe your policing policy as mayor. Quote, we put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. And you explain that is, quote, because that's where all the crime is. You went on to say, and the way you should get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them. You've apologized for that policy. But what does that kind of language say about how you view people of color or people in minority neighborhoods?
Well, if I go back and look at my time in office, the one thing that I'm really worried about, embarrassed about, was how it turned out with stop and frisk. When I got into office, there were 650 murders a year in New York City. And I thought that my first responsibility was to give people the right to live. That's the basic right of everything. And we adopted a policy which had been in place, the policy that all big police departments use of stop and frisk. What happened, however, was it got out of control.
Yeah, so he's saying at that point, then things just really escalated to where there was profiling, there were just, you know, sweeping issues with black and brown people being swept up and just kind of, you know, just frisked. A lot came out of that they took a hard look at it and said, well, okay, he was also sued and a judge enforced it. But let's talk to Sergeant Pete, 38 years a Chicago cop, and about stop and frisk, because we want to just back up and explain what it is exactly, Pete. I mean, just remind us what this is.
Well, during patrol or when you're working tactical, if you notice or saw somebody that you thought was possibly going to commit a crime or had committed a crime or somebody we were looking for or some group that we were looking for, we would pull over their cars or stop them on the street, pat them down, frisk them, look for guns or drugs. And, you know, he regretted, you know, Bloomberg said he regretted the way it ended up. But
he did.
In the long term, he said he went from 650 homicides to 300 homicides.
We actually have another soundbite here. Let's listen to that, because where he describes, he picked it up again and he explained the success of the program, which sort of confused me a little bit because I'm like, is he defending it? I don't know. See what you think. We have this second piece of audio here for you.
And when we discovered, I discovered that we were doing many, many, too many stop and frisks, we cut 95% of it out. And I've sat down with a bunch of African-American clergy and business people to talk about this, to try to learn. I've talked to a number of kids who'd been stopped. And I was trying to understand how we change our policies so we can keep the city safe, because the crime rate did go from 650, 50% down to 300.
So he said there was some success in the numbers, but there was also, many people found, divisiveness and divisions between the communities of color and the police. And it was not a particularly strong policy from that perspective. Many viewed it as racist and other issues with it. Sergeant Pete, what do you think there?
If no matter what you do, if you abuse it or take advantage of it and use it as a situation just to stop anybody that's walking around or driving around, and you're just looking, police departments, it's always headhunting. You want a body, you want a gun, you want an arrest. But if you use it for the intent that it was initially stated, and there's a way that you can treat people, you know, with respect and talk to them and get to know the people in the community. And if you're a good policeman, which many are, you would then realize who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. And if you see a car full of bad guys in an area...
What's a bad guy?
Well, a certain gang. If, say, in Chicago we have a gangster disciple, I see four gangster disciples that I know are in a car, and they're driving in a neighborhood for black gangster disciples. That's two rival gangs, two fighting gangs. I'm going to stop that car in order to prevent a shooting, B, a murder. You know,
you're saying it was a tool that was intended well and used to the best intentions, maybe in some cases was fine. It was okay. It was where it was abused,
right.
Misused, and it really had harmful impact on the communities of color in dealing with police and that kind of thing. There's a great story in the Tribune, even a local case here. Heidi Stevens was remarking as she was watching the debate last night. We have her on the show a lot, Heidi Stevens from the Chicago Tribune. She writes about a local student, a 20-year-old African-American student at Eastern, who was the only black athlete on a bus and got out of the bus to some point to take a selfie on the side of the road. Police mistook him, I think, for somebody else, did not know, threw him to the ground, and officers held a gun to his head. They surrounded him, threw him in the back of a squad car. It was a false arrest. It was a bad arrest, and it was a horrible thing that also speaks to kind of what went wrong with stop and frisk. These kinds of instances did nothing to kind of create respect within communities or trust, which is what the Chicago Police Department is trying to take a hard look at now.
Right. This
young
man, I believe, was a swimmer,
yes.
And he was the only African-American in this group. The coach said, let's stop the bus, take a picture as we're leaving where we had our competition. And the police swooped in, grabbed this kid, threw him on the ground, handcuffed him, and held him. And then the sad part was they didn't listen to anybody else that was there saying, hey, this kid just came from a swim meet. This kid's a college kid. This kid's with us. He couldn't have been the other guy. And then when they discovered, well, they might have made a mistake, they still kept the handcuffs on him. Sometimes common sense just works really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, everything doesn't have to be a confrontation. You could talk to people. You can gain their respect by just talking to them. And even the worst of the worst and the gangbangers, if you talk to them and you treat them right, when you're looking for them, they're the bad guy, you go get them. If they're not doing anything wrong, just because they happen to be or were involved in the gang life, you have to be able to figure things out and weed things out that way.
And isn't that the new priority for Chicago police? More, I don't want to call it community policing. That's what it used to be called. Maybe that's what it's going to be called now. But just have officers who are continually in one neighborhood. They get to know the community. They get to know the people who live there. And they establish relationships.
That's ideal. That's ideal. That's exactly what you want. And this Beck, he's increased the number of officers that are going into districts that are under the control of the commanders, gang guys, narcotics guys, even some detectives. So a district commander now has more assets at their disposal in order to fight certain crimes, in order to concentrate on certain areas. And that's what you need. And most of all, you know, I've said this on your show, I've said it every place, community involvement. It's just, you know, you just have to have people that can talk to people. And you know, everybody isn't a bad guy and everybody isn't a good guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's we're gonna pause here for just a moment, 1:52, and then we'll be back with Sergeant Pete because we have a police superintendent search that's underway here in Chicago, and I'm hearing we are a couple weeks away from an answer on that. We had interim superintendent Charlie Beck on the Bob Surratt show here yesterday, and as I was coming in, he was coming out in the elevator, and I started asking him questions. When are we gonna know? He says in a matter of weeks, early March, I believe. So
could
that's
be me.
I don't know that your name is one of the finalists, but you never know in elections these days. You just assume when we select people these days. You have no idea. But we're going to be back with Sergeant Pete, talk more about police issues in the city of Chicago here on WGN. Back here with Sergeant Pete here on WGN. It's Anna DeVlantis, 1:46. We talked stop and frisk because it's coming up repeatedly for former Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who's running for president now, came up on the debate stage last night. And I imagine that is not the last we're going to hear about that or the last time we're going to see him getting totally beaten up by his opponents, because he surged in the polls there in Nevada and he's got a ton of money to lead his path ahead. But that's not our concern right now. We're going to talk about police issues right here in Chicago. We do not currently have a superintendent, do we, Sergeant Pete? We have an interim superintendent. So, yes, Charlie Beck is there for now as they select who is going to lead this department into the future. And it's a big choice, a big decision, is it not?
Yes. I mean, I believe there were 25 applications and they were weeding the people out, looking at their backgrounds, looking at what they wrote, what their visions were. And then the police board then whittles it down, and it comes to three people. And those three people's names are given to the mayor. Then she vets them, and then she makes a decision on one of those three. If she doesn't like any of those three, she tosses them out, and then they give her, the police board, gives her three more people. And that's the way it was done when she was the head of the police board. Now she's the mayor, so the police board is going to give her three names. And we've got the three leaders right now are a woman from Aurora who leads a police department that's obviously the size of a Chicago police district. Mm. So she doesn't
Small
have
department.
Many. Tiny. Then they have the guy from Dallas, and his police department, I think, is 3,000. Which is a quarter.
In Dallas?
3,000. And I think
he's... And we have, what, 13,000?
13,000.
Officers
so
here.
So he has a quarter of what we have. And the last guy is a guy from L.A. that's been here. He's a Ph.D. He's a highly educated guy. Worked at the University of Chicago. Has been a consultant to the Chicago Police Department for over the last year. Now, if I'm a candidate for the police department superintendent's job, and the guy in front of me, the interim guy, turns around and appoints all the people that are in the command positions, reorganizes whatever you've got, changes the detective division, whose rate of closing cases was approaching 65%. Now he makes new areas. He puts policemen here, puts policemen there.
So wait, back up a second, Sergeant P. So the third candidate, the L.A. candidate, is one
right.
who knows the
I think
interim.
It's Malinowski or something like that.
He knows the interim chief because they both worked in L.A. together. Charlie Beck, he worked with a consent decree, which is what we
right,
have in Chicago.
Right. He worked with the scandal, the Rampart scandal in L.A. that
so
a lot of people forgot about.
Familiar with that race
that
relations and
cancer,
issues.
A consent decree. So this guy has worked with all of these things. And with the knowledge that he has of this current of our police department here, he would be the guy, if I was the mayor, he would be the guy that I would fold into that position. He would be acceptable because of his knowledge, his education, and his being here and knowing what's going on for a year.
Sergeant Pete, we have Superintendent Charlie Beck, the interim superintendent. He was on the Bob Surratt show yesterday, and he was asked by Bob, what were you looking for as you whittle down these three candidates and with the announcement of a new superintendent for CPD is right around the corner. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's all about the person. I don't think that being an outsider is an automatic advantage. I don't think being an insider is an automatic advantage. You know, you need the blend of somebody that has the knowledge of the Chicago Police Department, but then the vision that has transformed other police departments across the nation. And so either one, I want the best person, and I don't want to silo it by saying that it has to be an insider or an outsider.
Does he get a say?
I'm sure he's talked to her, but he says insider, outsider. You know, they better hope that the first deputy superintendent, Riccio, stays around, because he came up through the ranks. He came up legitimately. He came up passing exams. He came up with respect, with the knowledge of this department. He knows what's going on, so you have to have somebody there that can do that. And I don't care if it's the guy that's already here, or it's somebody else, or it's somebody that we don't even know about. You still need somebody that can continue, I don't know if it's the word, continuity between the officers and the leadership. Because it's, you could pick whoever you want to be the superintendent. It's the individual guy and girl that's wearing that blue shirt and that star that's out there for 8.5, 9 hours a day, every day, risking life and limb to protect the citizens of the city. As a note, so far this year, 19 policemen in this country have been murdered. Some were just out and out assassinated. Mm. And then we have to worry about the number of suicides. We lose more policemen to suicides every year in this country than we do to shootings. So we have to have somebody that can encompass the entire person that he's going to lead.
Speak to the challenges of the job today, and there are a number of them. One more thing from Charlie Beck, and then we want to move on from this issue, because there are some things, other things in Chicago to talk about in regards to police, including the ride-hailing impersonators. We've got some of that going on, and City Council is trying to propose some changes to crack down on that. And also bail reform. We want to try to hit that, but improving safety on the L trains and CTA, it's been an issue. It's an issue that's been coming up lately, as we've seen a rise on some of the train lines and some of the bus lines, or the transportation lines, I should say. Here's the interim superintendent, Charlie Beck, on that issue.
We're making sure that not only the officers assigned to CTA are all in uniform, they're all present, they're all riding the train, and then we're making sure that the district officers, the officers assigned to the neighborhoods in Chicago, spend time on the platform. And by spending time on the platform, they keep order, they make sure that the right people are on the train and the wrong people aren't.
So is that a change? In the past, were officers who were in a certain neighborhood, did they also sort of go up and patrol on the platforms?
We also had that, where you did a check, an L check, and you did a bus check. You check the buses, you check the L's, you go up on the platform. Assigning 50 officers to the CTA detail, think about it, trains run 24 hours a day. So do you have two officers in each shift? It's hit and miss. You got to hit where they're committing the crimes, which is the red line, when 11 people pummel somebody and steal their phone, the shooting of the guy by UIC. It's sheep and wolves. You're sitting there minding your own business, and the guy will snatch your purse, snatch your phone, punch you in the head, and take off.
There were a couple of them for coats. People had got their coats stolen. I think overnight
there
was another one.
Patch,
that was very valuable coats. That's also an issue. So that's the way they're kind of approaching this. Get the officers patrolling those areas a little more. Get more eyes on the platforms and try to sniff this out, or at least deter it, I suppose.
These crooks are cowards. They see a man or a woman in a uniform with a badge and a gun, they're going to think twice, and they're not going to bother anybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so ride hailing. You've been on the show before, and we've talked about these ride sharing situations where you think it's your Uber driver pulling over to take you somewhere, and you get in the car, and it's not. A lot of cases you mentioned to us before, make sure you look at your app, look at the license plate, make sure you are getting into the car that you're supposed to be getting into, and not just look at someone who's nodding at you saying, get in, because we've had a couple of instances here, different parts of the city. We had some on the north side, some on the south side, about people posing as rideshare drivers in order to rob people. And now the city council is looking at a minimum $10,000 fine, up to 180 days in jail, opposed against anybody who's doing that. And they say that they might be able to take your car as well. They might impound your vehicle. Is this going to be a deterrent? Do you like the way this sounds? Is it going to make any difference?
Well, I think you have to have some sort of a severe punishment. But if you take the car, you're ending up taking the car from the bank because the guy probably doesn't own the car. So, and the recent incidents, some of these rideshare people have that opposing his rideshare have been women. And they get somebody in the car, and, you know, at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, if you're a little tipsy and somebody pulls over, I'm your Uber, you're not thinking right. You hop in.
All-Star Weekend, I think Alderman Riley was talking about this. It might have happened near him, if not in his ward nearby. Three women from Wisconsin came downtown in an SUV pretending to be driving a rideshare vehicle, these women, and they picked someone up and robbed him. He didn't know what car he was getting into, and that's what happened. It's a tough thing, and then you hope that those types of penalties will send a message. What city council's doing.
If we have laws, enforce the laws we have.
Yeah. Good point. Always good to see you, Sergeant Pete. Much more. We'll talk to you again, right? Next week.
Yes.
See you then. The news is coming up next. Thank you. From the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour here on WGN. Anna DeBlant is here on WGN. Thanks for being with us. 206. Okay, here's a question for you. Do you pay grandma for babysitting? What about regular babysitting? What if she's doing it all the time? Child care. And if you're a grandma, you're watching the kids, do you expect something in exchange? I mean, I know you love the grandkids. You love them, but should there be sort of something, some compensation? I know with us, we take the grandmas and Nana out for dinners and we go to shows together. I don't know. I hope that's enough because we love it when they watch our little girl. But what do you do? Let us know. Text us, call us, and tell us what the arrangement is for you and how you figure this out. Do you pay for babysitting? It's an interesting issue. Came up on a mom blog, and somebody is here who I want to introduce you to because she knows a lot of things, especially about mom blogs and issues like this. Hillary Smith-Bird is the managing editor at Chicago Parent Magazine. Hello, Hillary. How are you?
Hi. How are you? This is a great topic.
It is, because I feel like when I saw this topic and I saw people talking about it online, I felt like, oh, wait a minute, I guess I haven't given this one enough thought. We just kind of assume that it's so great that we have a grandma and Nana in town and that they both are really active with all the grandkids in the family and seem to want to help out a lot. But, you know, you feel like, gosh, you can probably take them for granted too. You know, we feel lucky.
Right.
And then to think that some parents are talking about, hey, I'm leaning on grandma all the time to do the childcare. Should I actually be paying grandma?
Right. And I think that's where it depends. It depends on how often you use grandma and grandparents, or even sometimes aunts and uncles, whoever happens to be around you that's family, you feel like, oh, hey, you know, we're family, so we can kind of get away with this. And it's saving us, and they get to hang out together, and so this is wonderful.
It's a win-win for a parent.
It is. It really is a win-win for a parent. I think if you are, especially as the parent, you have to then, if you're wondering whether or not you should pay them, ask what they are giving up. You know, if you're dropping your kids off at your parents' house, or, you know, a grandparent's house for 8 hours a day, you know, 5 days a week, or 10 hours a day because you're working, then you've got to ask yourself, okay, what else would your parents be doing during that time? And, you know, even if they're running an eBay business, they would be otherwise making money,
right,
that they're not able to.
Especially with young kids. You got to be watching them all the time.
Exactly.
Sure. And I think that's sometimes maybe too physical for some grandparents. I mean, I've seen that in our own family. When the kids were really young and they're toddlers and crawling around, it seemed like a big responsibility to be watching a number of them. 815, when my mom retired at 48, she said she is not retiring to babysit. So there. She set the rules. That's probably pretty important to have that conversation. I'm not retiring to babysit. That's not what I'm doing.
Right.
Here's another one. Loving a grandchild doesn't mean you want to watch them all day. She may feel like she doesn't have a choice, Grandma. You need to make it okay for her to say no.
Right.
That's the other
right.
thing. It's the guilt trip. Oh, we really need you. We have to go to the school function or wherever. It's so important. can you do it? And then it sort of makes them, put them in a situation. Grandmas don't want to say no. Grandpas don't want to say no.
Right. Well, and I think if you have the conversation literally at the outset, whether it's when the child is born or when you get into a situation where you know you're going to need them on a regular basis, have the conversation and say, okay, we're going to ask you to do this. We'd like to offer you X amount of dollars. Whatever you feel like as your, you know, personal family you can afford.
Right.
And if let them say no. Let them say, oh my goodness, we love to do this. We would love to be around them. It shouldn't cost you anything. You know, we're saving you money. You don't have to drop them off at the daycare. And this is just so much fun for us. Let them say that instead of assuming they don't want to. Because, you know, like your caller said, the grandparents love to be grandparents and they love to give the kids back.
But
they don't necessarily want, you know, four nights a week to be overnight, because then they're parents again and your kids are spending more time with your parents than they are with you.
Yeah, that's the other thing. 224, my mom watches my 2-year-old 3 times a week while I'm at work and she has refused any money from doing it. She really is the best. That is the best. And I know, yeah, my sister's a single mom. She relies on my mom a lot because she needs the help, and that she does it, and she does it willingly and lovingly, and sometimes it drives her nuts, but I think that she's not getting paid, and that's the arrangement they have. I just think it's something that, you know, to sort of think about.
Right, absolutely. And if they do refuse money, if your parents or, you know, the older generation, whether it's parents or aunts or uncles, really do, make sure you're thanking them at the very least. Make sure that you're thanking them every time and teach your kids to thank them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want to, you know, if your kid goes to preschool and your grandparent or your parent is picking them up from preschool, frame a piece of, you know, a preschool art or something so that they have something that feels like a thank you. So it's not just, hey, I'm doing this and it feels completely thankless because nobody's ever said anything to me.
708, I think this is pretty common. I'm going to read this one. My mom and dad will not take any money. She begs me to babysit. It's only 12 to 20 hours a week at my house. They don't want my daughter to go to school next year. My mom is 78 and dad is 80. See, you do see this a lot. The grandparents just love spending time with the grandkids.
Right.
And I just, you know, they don't take pay. Here's somebody who does pay. I pay my mom-in-law to watch my little one part-time. She's been watching my 1-year-old since she was 6 months old. Not as much as we'd pay a daycare person, but it's a fair amount. So we just want to show we appreciate her time and that kind of thing. I do feel like most of the people I know who rely on grandmas and grandpas and grandparents, they, you know, there's no payment expected. It's nothing like that. I do think that sometimes you see that grandparents can get to a point where that's clearly getting to be a little too much for them.
Right.
And you got to be paying attention to that kind of thing, too.
Yes, yes. Make sure you're not intruding on their health and their well-being, too.
630, my hubby told our daughter and her hubby they couldn't afford us as babysitters. That's probably true. You're probably rock star babysitters. I mean, you think about grandparents spoil kids and, you know, just grandkids and, you know, they're there for them. And they're so loving. That's why, as a parent, it's such a relief to have somebody who you trust and is going to, like, just, you know, love your kid. And it's such a great arrangement. They have no kids after a year, and that is good. That's their situation. 702, I was asked by my daughter to quit my job, which I was getting very tired of, to babysit 5 days a week, and she would pay me. So instead of paying, you know, someone outside the family, you got the mom there. That seems like a great arrangement when it works.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think if you're a sandwich generation too, that your parents are in the house, that's a situation too where you can make that arrangement of, listen, you know, we're making sure that you have food and gas and all of these other things, and that is more of our payment, you know, if you're here while the kids are here.
What's your arrangement at your house? Do you pay the grandparents? Do you do something special for them, or do you not pay at all? It's just about love and family, and that works for you. Let us know. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls. Continue to read your texts on this one. So fascinating to see the variety of different takes on this, which kind of makes me feel like maybe the conversation does need to be had on this matter, because some people pay, some people say, nope, there's no way, it wouldn't be expected, it wouldn't be accepted, and that's just the way it is. So we'll continue to talk with Hillary Smith-Bird. She's the managing editor at Chicago Parent Magazine on this issue of grandparents watching the kids coming up here on WGN. We've been talking about, do you pay your grandparents? Do you give them some kind of compensation for watching your kids? This is an issue. I am so many people responding, and thank you for your texts and your calls. We're going to get right to them. We're here with Hillary Smith Bird. She's the managing editor at Chicago Parent Magazine, and they do a dilemma thing, a talk like this every Friday, don't you, Hillary? Where you get parents to call in and, or I'm sorry, to log on to Facebook and discuss things like this.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, we let parents, we give out a question, and you know our readers will email us a question, and we ask it for them. So it's pretty anonymous.
And parents share anonymous, so you can be honest, but you're sharing ideas with each other, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Here's one. Gary says, my wife and I babysit for our two granddaughters 2 days a week, and we do it except for vacations and things like that. We thoroughly enjoy it. We look for nothing in return other than their appreciation. They're in first and third grades, and we have a lot of fun together. I quit my job to watch the grandkids, so I was paid for watching them. And then I watched my grandson for a year. From the time he was 3 months old, he's now seven. We still have that special bond. That's so cool. That is really cool. And then we got the phone lines. Let's go. Let's check in with, how about, is it Joan? Joan Jasmine, is that who we're going to talk to first here? Yeah, let's talk to Joan. Joan, what's your situation? What are you doing? Thank you for being on WGN.
Hi. For the last 8 years, I've been babysitting for two of my grandchildren full time. And it's the best thing in the whole world. I get really emotional about it. But in fact, my 10-year-old granddaughter said she told me she said, you know, my mom needs to have another baby.
I love that.
Yeah.
So it's just a special time for you. You look forward to it.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I retired when I was 60, nice. And that was just when my youngest one was two and one was one, and the timing was perfect. My daughter-in-law was going back to work, and it's been my life. I love it.
Oh.
And but you know, in the beginning, I did take pay for it because it was full time, mm-hmm. and I was buying a lot of food, and I was buying a lot of toys and things like that just to keep them busy. So it would pay me weekly, and I would just really, it was all spent on the kids, but. My husband is wonderful, and it's been just wonderful for us.
Oh, that's awesome, Joan. Thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for calling in, WGN. Let's talk to Megan, and I think, Megan, your situation is also you're providing. You're doing it for free, is that right? You're watching the kids, the grandkids.
Yes, I am. I have two sons, and one lives about 3 hours from us, and the other lives right a couple towns over. And for the son living close to us, I've had his kids since they were infants. And they're now in school. And I have my other sons are younger. And when he needs me, he's got to go to work and the kids are too sick to go to daycare or something, he'll call me. And I absolutely love doing it. I will say that it would be nice, because they don't pay me,
uh-huh.
It would be nice to get a gas card every now and then.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're driving
because
a lot.
I do a lot of traveling. I take the kids to school. We're not in the same town. I pick them up. And then if I'm driving 2.5 hours away, a gas card every once in a while would be great. But my grandkids love me. I love them. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Oh, thank you, Megan. That sounds so beautiful. I love that. Actually, 224 just suggested that on the text line. Thank them with a car wash and a full tank of gas every once a month or so. That's not a bad idea, right?
Right.
Think about that, right?
That's exactly it. Even if it's something small, it feels, you know, it might feel small to you as a parent because you end up saving, you know, thousands of dollars a month. I mean, the cost of a mortgage
Seriously.
Payment or rental for not having to pay for babysitting. But, you know, you've got to give them some kind of token to remind them how thankful you are and that their time means something to you.
Sure. Child care is expensive, as you point out. 815, I'd love to babysit my granddaughter more, but I have to drive an hour and a half to get there. Is it asking too much if I offered to pay for a pull-out sofa bed? Or maybe they should pay for one for you, 815. We've got another caller here. Let's talk to Kathy. Kathy, what's your situation?
Hey.
Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Kathy. Hi. I'm out in the western suburbs, and I have 9 grandchildren. And I do not babysit like a regular person. I just recently started babysitting for my daughter 2 afternoons a week. But to me, I babysit a lot. Trust me, I'm driving to babysit right now. But the it's a gift to me because it has kept me young.
Aww.
I've taught myself card tricks, magic tricks, to show the kids. I've learned to make things for cooking times with my older granddaughters, where we made cream puffs and eclairs, things I've never made before.
Oh, that's awesome.
I probably wouldn't go to the zoo as much as I do now if I didn't have grandchildren. I've boned up more on my movie facts. When we watch movies, I love telling them obscure facts about this star or that star or this genre of film. To me, it has kept me young. It's kept me sharp and keeps me running around.
That is such...
But it's a gift.
It is a gift. Thank you, Kathy, for putting in that perspective for us, for hearing that. That's,
sure.
It's really, I mean, think about that. From the grandparents' perspective, there's a little bit of physicality, as we were talking earlier, Hillary, when you're running around after the little ones, and I've seen the physical exhaustion look on my own mom's face when she's like, okay, are you coming home? What's going on? But then there's sort of that gift, Kathy just pointed out, where you're learning from each other, right?
Yeah. My dad loves having an excuse to watch Sesame Street again. So, in my family, my older brother's kids are, 13, 14 years older than my nephew, who's 13 years older than my oldest. And so, it sort of got to the age and finally got to the point that my dad could start watching Sesame Street again. He loves it. So.
You kind of do. Revisiting your childhood is sort of fun. Going to the zoos and the museums. I find that just
exactly.
As a parent is really, it sort of just opens your eyes to the world again after you get a little cynical and stuff. You go and you check out stuff again through a child's eyes. And there's something beautiful about that. Beth, we want to hear from you because you have a different take on this whole thing. Tell us your story. You're on WGN.
Hi. Yes, I do stay with my grandchildren. I have four of them, but two of them are in school. And I'm not paid. I don't want to be paid. It's really fun for me. However, my daughter-in-law is the most fabulous chef you would ever imagine. And every Ooh. Time she sends something home with me, I'm just ecstatic.
So, that's wonderful. That's a great
gift. I consider myself lucky in that respect. But yeah, they're great kids. I just love them.
Oh, Beth, thank you. Thanks for waiting. We have one more phone call here we want to get to. It's Pat. And Pat, tell us your story here about, are you a grandparent? Or are you a parent? What's the situation?
I'm a grandparent. And my daughter went back to work last year. And she got divorced at the same time that she went back to work. And she needed somebody to get the kids on the bus and get the kids off the bus. So since I only live a mile and a half from them, I had no problem doing that. Mm-hmm. And then they split time between mom and dad, and just recently, dad has his dad move in, so I lost that privilege, but I still babysit at my daughter's house, and she pays me with a massage.
How cool is that? Is that good for you? You like that?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And now that my former son-in-law's father is taking care of the boys, I'm kind of going through withdrawal because I don't have that several times a week thing.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Pat, thank you. Thanks for sharing it. See, there are other ways to compensate the grandparents. We were talking about buying them gas, Hillary. We were talking about all kinds of things. 630 says, my mom watches my daughters, so we always take my parents out to dinner and purchase them bigger gifts for the holidays or just kind of get them a gift at random times during the year. Right?
Well, that's a
great idea. Little things you could do. I raised my granddaughter until she was six, the 708. My son couldn't afford to pay me, and that's what we do. 847, I feel the same way as that last caller. I love my grandkids more than anything, and the parents always say thank you. But once in a while, a lunch out at Starbucks or a Starbucks card would be appreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just so moving to hear. I can't remember. It was Joan, I think, who told us the story about how, just how she's so... It was such a beautiful time for her to be able to spend time with her grandkids, and that it's something that really adds to her life in a big way, just to be able to spend that much time with them.
Oh, sure. Well, and, when your kids are older, too, when they get to 7, 8, 9, even a little bit older, but, before they need to, stop needing a sitter, have them help pick something out, whether it's a gift card or flowers or, they're around their grandparents enough to know something intimate that maybe you as a parent don't know.
Yeah.
Know that you know, grandma has gotten very into movies. So, you know, maybe books about movies or a trivia game about movies, something like that. Let your kids help pick out some of those things. And that will make, even if it's a small gift, make it a lot more meaningful to your parents.
It's a great thing to think about. The other thing Kathy pointed out, which is true, as parents, I find there are those windows of time when you need coverage where you really couldn't even get a babysitter. And thank God for grandparents, if you're lucky enough to be able to lean on them at those times, because I know there's a window in between activities at school when you're supposed to either pick them up or do something with your kid or arrange something, or on the weekends if you have to be somewhere for work or whatever after hours. It's just, I mean, those are amazing times to be able to say, Grandma, will you help out? Right?
Right.
And so appreciated.
Right.
My wife and I, 219, have 10 grandkids. Because of the way we work, we pretty much only see them on weekends. And we ask for them to stay over. If our kids ask, they come to me because they know I won't say no. I love it. That's the thing about grandparents. The Nana and my grandma, they give them a lot of sugar. They're very good with the ice cream. Right now we have Girl Scout cookies. They're eating rows of Thin Mints. This is what goes on with grandparents, and that's okay. That's okay.
Right.
They don't think you can not pay them and then maybe expect to set all the rules as well. There's something there too, right, Hillary? I want to promote what you do here because we're running out of time, even though we have so many more texts to get to and people that are weighing in on this fascinating issue. And I'm glad we talked about it because I learned something there.
Yeah. Yeah, this is great.
I'm going to, you know, go and thank the grandparents in a big way now because I'm thinking about it, and that's a good thing. But you talk about issues like this on that Facebook chat that you do. It's called, what is it? Do you have a name for it, or a way people can find you?
It's our dilemma. It's our weekly dilemma on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. You know, pop on to our Facebook page, Chicago Parent on Facebook. We also put questions in the back of our magazine every month. Our question this month was about love because it is February. So, but you can see questions you may have missed in the back of our magazine that comes out monthly.
That's awesome. And then you also talk about things about what to do indoors when it's cold, how to, you know, enjoy leap day. I mean, you have lots of like resources that would apply to people with kids, with grandkids, and even if you don't, really.
We do. We're updating those literally every day. We have new resources for you to, you know, if you just want to get out, if you're a grandparent wondering where to take the grandkids, you know, when it's a day off of school. Or Pulaski Day, or whatever's coming up next. It's off of school.
You've got them covered, right?
Right. You can get them covered.
Chicago Parent Magazine. Thank you, Hillary. Good seeing you.
Thanks so much.
It's 2:29 here on WGN. We've got the news coming up for you here at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. Thanks for all your calls and your texts about this grandparent and issue. Do you pay your grandparents? Was how we started it out when they raise, where they watch your kids or babysit your children. It's an interesting issue, and from a lot of you, it was such an emotion from Joan earlier telling us about how she wouldn't have it any other way and that it's just such a wonderful experience for her and she gets so much out of it. It was just a beautiful thing. 708 kind of agrees. I raised my granddaughter until she was 6. My son couldn't afford to pay me. That's why I did it. I wouldn't have had it any other way. And that's how it is. We're super close. And others are weighing in as well. Keep it coming. We're going to continue to talk about this. My daughter lives a half block away. I had twin girls and a 5-year-old son. We're over there every day. I hope that's okay. I bet it is. I feel the same thing. A lot of people relating to Joan if she talked about how she had this very meaningful bond with her grandkids and that it is an awesome, awesome thing. All right. Justin Breen is in here right now in the studio with us, and he has a new book out. He is the former editor of DNAinfo.com. That's how I know you, from that popular news site that was too short-lived, actually. And you've been a journalist about town, and now you're an author and a PR. You're in PR as well, right, Justin? Yeah. So what's your PR company called?
Or Brepik LLC.
And then you're a parent. Wade into this grandparent area for a second here. Do you rely on the grandparents? Are you happy you got the grandparents? Do they help out with the kids?
100%. My mom and my wife's parents absolutely help out all the time, and we definitely do not pay them. They are very happy to watch our children.
They are. And do you reward them in any way? Do you do anything kind of special for them? How does that work out?
Boy, that's a tough question. I wasn't expecting that. But it's, every now and then we'll do something nice for them. But I think...
They seem to love it.
They seem to genuinely love it. I mean, my mom just took us, my whole family, to Disney World for her 70th birthday.
And
it was
sweet.
Really nice. So we just went to all the parks and had fast passes and stuff. And my mom really, really loves our sons, and it's really nice to see their relationship.
Was that a trip for her Or did she want to go to Disney, or is she doing it really because
Oh, no, it's not for her.
Some people, adults, love Disney.
No, I have friends who got married at vacation. Disney. No, and that's fine. That is not my thing either. But no, our kids loved it for sure.
That's awesome. 708, hi, Anna. Both my wife and I watch our grandchildren. If you're getting paid to watch your grandchildren, that's babysitting. If you're not getting paid, it's called spending quality time with your grandchildren. I'd agree with that. It's cool to see. I mean, I guess you feel lucky when you have that kind of family unit where people are close enough. People don't, you know, people move away and things like that. It's harder to rely on each other for that kind of stuff. But it's great when it works. It is great when it works. All right, Justin, I want to talk about a couple things with you because you were involved in independent journalism here for a while. DNAinfo.com is kind of how I know you because you were doing great works over there and you guys were breaking stories and doing community news and a lot of local news and getting a lot of accolades and rewards and all kinds of things. And then it went away.
It did, and I resigned from there to start my own company before that happened. Definitely could see that the writing on the wall that, you know, I thought it was going to get shut down. That was part of what led to me resigning from there. But, you know, obviously, if you look at the journalists in the city and beyond, I mean, so many former DNA Info journalists are doing
great things,
really just amazing things. I mean, with Black Club Chicago and all these other sites, and folks are at the Sun-Times and the Tribune and on TV and radio and all that kind of stuff. So it's great to see kind of this, this, you know, it's an exodus, but then to see them just kind of end up in all these other great places. And you know, with me, it was everything I learned in terms of like what I wanted my PR firm to be was what I learned at DNA Info. Like, I created my entire business model based on how other PR firms annoyed me for 20 years. And so everybody laughs at that. Right. So, like, everybody laughs at that. But, like, that's why my business has been successful, because I was doing things similar to the stories that at DNA Info just for my clients now. So it's a lot of fun, and it's endlessly enjoyable because I'm working with all these incredible people around the planet.
Yeah, how about that? You started your own firm and you haven't looked back, and it's worked out. And it's interesting that you were able to apply those skills and say, hey, I know the wrong way. Now I've got to figure out the right way. And,
yep.
And you've got it. And I know that you're a very talented person because I've always admired your work. So it's cool that that's working. Congratulations. And what else is working is now you are an author.
Yeah.
Epic Business. And I know I like how when I communicate with you online, you say epic.
Every time,
which is a good branding tool, I'm told. And
yes,
this is what you do. This is how you're known. 30 secrets to build your business exponentially and give you the freedom you live to live the life you want. There's a lot there. So is it just for entrepreneurs, or who's this book for?
It's for entrepreneurs. It's for hopeful entrepreneurs. So 3 years ago, I had my salary cut in half at DNA Info. You know, it was no fault of mine. It was just cutbacks, and tried to find a full-time job. Couldn't find one, and essentially begged people for freelance opportunities, turned those freelance opportunities into my company while I was working full-time at DNA Info. Got my fifth client after reaching out to 5,000 people. Then I resigned from DNA Info, so that was around June of 2017, and it's been onward and upward ever since.
What a story. So you got five clients, and you decided that would be enough.
That was enough.
To start your own thing,
yep.
And you took the leap.
Yep.
And you did it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you transform that into advice for others? Are there a couple of things you can tell people who are listening right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, that book literally has tens of millions of dollars worth of advice in it, just based on the people that I, you know, basically the only people I hang out with now are these super high-level entrepreneurs, and I just hang out with them all the time and listen to them and then implement their advice into my business. So, you know, the number one thing is that I learned is that do what you really love to do and what you're good at. So my entire business model is writing stories that are interesting and pitching those to media. If someone asks me to do something else, I say no, and I'll just refer you to somebody else. And then just doubling down and continuing to raise rates, because when you raise rates, it just weeds out all the nonsense and only attracts the best of the best people. So essentially, I've created an entire global network of the very top people that keep referring me to other top people.
You mentioned you hang out with all these high-level tech people or leaders and entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Do you think, is that a piece of the success, do you think, to network like that, to find
yep.
people who are very successful in areas that you can learn from?
So a good friend of mine early on in this process said, your network equals your net worth, and it's 100% true. When I started my business, I was in lower level nickel and dime networking groups. I would go into those meetings, and people thought I was an alien or acting out of my mind. But what I found is when I went to these higher level networking groups, some of which are, you know, an investment of upwards of $12,000 a year, the people are very serious in that, and the nicest, most giving people ever. And again, when you have this confidence, not cockiness, but confidence in your abilities and knowing that you do a good job, it attracts other people like that. And then those people refer you to other people like that.
So didn't you cover sports back in the day? Wasn't that your background? You were a sports guy.
Sports editor, sports writer. Then at DNA Info, I was a senior editor. And yeah, it's just, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, if I can do this, anyone can do this. I mean, and again, 90% of my day is hanging out with very high-level people. I don't do that much work. I make more money than I ever thought possible, and I only work with very amazing people. So it's really just, it's just incredible. It's so the American dream come true.
How do you meet the high-level people? Do you just go reach out to them on Twitter or on social media and say, it'd be epic if we meet each other?
No, so like early on, that's what happened. But you know, again, like when you start planting seeds with people, even a year or 2 years ago, it's, you know, those seeds start to bear fruit after a while. And again, when you continually hang out with all these amazing people and you do a good job for them, then they just refer you to other people like that. So this is not like this is going to happen overnight kind of thing. This is like a grind of, you know, 2-3 years, and then it gets to that level where it just becomes this own amazing entity that will continue to grow and grow and grow.
I think sometimes it's taking the leap that is the stopper. Sometimes people just get comfortable. We all do. This is what happens. You know, you get in a situation where this is fine, this is good, and this is okay. And even if you have these ideas percolating in your head to do something different, do something for yourself, build something on your own, there is a leap there, and there's a big risk factor, and that part you got to get over it. But it sounds like that has been rewarding for you in a big way.
Beyond rewarding in a big way. And frankly, I spend a lot of time helping others make that leap because I know how many people helped me when I started. I met with former journalist yesterday who's basically scared to death about this and helping him start his own business. In fact, when we were meeting, he came up with the name of his company and he just got an LLC yesterday. So I'm like, that's how you pay it forward. And I think the other key about entrepreneurship is you genuinely have to care about people like in a very deep personal way. And when you do that, people see, you know, that you genuinely care about them. And it's really exciting because, you know, it just leads to amazing opportunities.
Awesome. Justin Breen, he's the author now, in addition to his PR company. But Epic Business is the book, 30 Secrets to Build Your Business Exponentially and Give You the Freedom to Live the Life You Want. Thanks, Justin. Good to see
you. No problem.
Thanks for coming on WGN. Coming up here on WGN, we are going to talk trending topics, including the 80s tune that now has 1 billion views on YouTube. Can you guess what it is? There's only one other 80s tune that has that. This is the second. Jimmy Kimmel, he's got a new job. And Mickey Mouse, the Hawaiian version, showed up at Union Station. What was that all about? Coming up in Trending Topics. Time for me, and it's Trending Topics, also time for Ji-Suk Yi and Lauren Lapka stepping into the studio here as we talk about what's trending, what people are sharing and caring about here in the Chicago area. And the first one is the music video that just hit 1 billion views on YouTube. It is an 80s tune. Any guesses to what it might be at all? Any guesses?
I already heard it this morning, so I'm not going to say anything.
Here it is. Let's listen.
Take on Me.
I knew it. I was really going to guess
really?
It.
Did you know that already, though?
No, I really didn't
Lauren.
Know. I swear. The reason why is because it's a really fascinating video, especially for the 80s. The technology and how it looks, the like half-drawn thing. That was mind-blowing.
Were you born in the 80s?
Yes. 89, though.
I don't know what about the song, but I love it.
It's a great song.
It is. It's danceable. It's fun. It's
you can sing along with it. I can actually understand what they're saying. That helps.
But when you get a big group of like drunk people singing this, and you get to that high note, and everyone's like, it's like, oh god, my ears.
I gotta try that. This is 1986. The video received 6 MTV Music Awards, nominated for Favorite Pop Rock Video at the AMAs.
It's a great song because you really do want to sing along. I'm having to hold myself back because my singing voice is so horrifying.
It actually is not, but it's no. Compared to mine, it is actually pretty good. The other 80s video to reach 1 billion views, by the way, Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine. I can totally picture that because that's popular with the millennials now, too.
Yes.
These are two that you can see cross generations. And maybe
great songs that don't go away.
That's true. That's the sign of a very good song, I would say. All right, at Union Station, people were surprised to see Mickey Mouse showed up in the Hawaiian-inspired Disney pop-up. All of a sudden, people are just going, here in Chicago, they're at Union Station, and they see Mickey Mouse showing up. And it's pretty cool. It's like, well, what's going on? You go outside, it's cold. You come inside, and here's Mickey Mouse wearing the Hawaii-inspired kind of like wearing the leis and passing out all the Hawaiian stuff, the music, the whole thing. Kind of a cool thing to do there.
Yeah, maybe help you feel a little bit warmer.
I think they're trying to plug everyone. They're trying to tell everyone to go to Aulani, which is in Hawaii. That's the Disney resort there.
Oh, that's right. That,
I have a little inside information. This is my previous gig.
Oh,
I was lucky enough to go over to the Hawaiian resort.
You got to go there.
A couple times.
Was
very
it awesome?
Lucky. It's beautiful. It's great for adults and kids. Because, heck, you're in Hawaii.
Yeah, what can go wrong there?
Right.
I've never been to Hawaii. That's on my life checklist. I gotta check that out. I gotta check it out. All right, we must talk about the Democratic debate last night because they were just going after Mike Bloomberg. The poor billionaire was there, and everyone was beating up on him.
$68 billion. I feel so sorry for him.
He did not look happy. And this, I think out of all of them, and they all were going after him, every single one of them. I just felt I think even Biden took a shot at him at one point, and certainly Mayor Pete, and we had Elizabeth Warren piling on. She landed the biggest punch, I would say. Well, let's listen to this one. This is the one that's making news today.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is. But understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has...
So Bloomberg has been soaring in the polls when they weren't sure he was going to make the debate stage there in Nevada initially, but then he came in second to Bernie out of nowhere. It seems that his ads and his campaigning and everything, you know, he's paying for is certainly paying off. And they were going after him because I think some of them are fighting for their political lives there. If you look at some of the people in third, fourth, and fifth place, they need to really point out something about Bloomberg or else they might not be in it much longer. Even Andrew Yang, who's now a CNN kind of talking head.
He is, yes.
You saw him afterwards. He says, I don't think his staff prepared him very well.
Yeah, he didn't seem ready at all.
Exchange made me cringe. Oh,
he had to know it was coming too.
I know,
that's what surprises me.
That's
I know Elizabeth Warren doesn't have $68 billion, but I do want to mention that she is worth around an estimated $12 million.
That came up last night. Yeah, they even said Bernie Sanders has three homes. Mm-hmm. They're all millionaires.
Yeah.
And Mayor Pete likes to point all that out because Mayor Pete still has college loans.
I think he's the poorest of the bunch.
He's made that clear. Oh, he's clear. If you want, if the poor, he's your guy. But he also, I think he did well actually yesterday.
He was very
poised, and seems like when he did that little back and forth with Klobuchar, he went after her and she had a hard time taking it. And you thought, well, how is she going to take it when she's facing off against President Trump?
Yeah.
That came to my mind. And yet Buttigieg stood strong. I don't know if you like Buttigieg or don't like Buttigieg, but he was definitely able to take on just about everybody on that stage. Mike Bloomberg saying he's going to sell his $60 billion company if he beats Donald Trump, by the way. A lot of people asking, what happens if you're president and you're running a multi-billion dollar media company? You've put some restrictions on the journalists that work for you right now so that they can't really dig in deep and cover you or your campaign or your foundation or your family. And what's going to happen if you're president? So now he says, okay, we'll put things in a blind trust and we'll sell the media company.
Well, yeah, I think you would have to do that. Otherwise, it would be highly unethical to be running the country and a media corporation.
Ethics, schmethics.
What happened to those?
Ben Affleck calls Jennifer Garner, the divorce, the biggest regret of his life. He's really taken a look back and said that that was not good. That was a bad mistake. 10-year marriage to her. And he just said, I'm a person with compulsive behavior, and I did the wrong thing there. Hmm. So there you go. He's owning it.
I wonder when celebrities make statements like that. I always wonder, are they hoping that it gets back to, in this case, Jennifer Garner? Is he hoping? Because, I mean, they know that it's going to get covered. And it's, you know, celebrity media is so hungry for those type of comments that it's not going to die down. It's going to keep, they're going to be spinning it over and over.
Jennifer, just like what do you think about
this? Just like Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. You know, people just held on to that for weeks.
They still do. I mean, when they interacted, a few weeks ago, everyone's like,
I think it might be part of therapy for him. And he's just kind of coming out and saying, you know, what's what, and being honest about stuff. But, you know, who knows? It's always out there. It could happen. I know that fans would be rooting for that.
I would give Ben Affleck a second chance.
if he comes running. G's here for you. Harrison Ford says a new Indiana Jones movie is in the works.
Oh,
they've
boy.
Been making a lot of these, haven't they? I mean, how long is it? 1981 was Raiders of the Lost Ark. And, yeah, the Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom was 84. These go back way, you know, and then they remade it with the, in 2008, they had that remake with Shia LaBeouf, but now they say there's
Didn't
another
they do
one.
Like three of them with
yeah,
him?
Yeah, that's right. I thought there was a series yeah. with Shia. So they're kind of doing, they're going again.
The one Indiana Jones scene that always comes to mind is the guy that's doing the fancy knife work, and then Harrison Ford just pulls out his gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a great. That's always the one that pops into my head. I
that
think
is
I
the
saw
best.
It as a little kid, I think.
When he just sort of faces off
yeah,
and has this look like whatever.
A great movie to watch if your family doesn't completely understand English either. You don't really have to understand English to watch that. Enjoy that movie.
Did your family laugh at that?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That and The Goonies.
The Goonies, oh, too. They got movie. That. Oh, those were great movies, though. They were great movies. It's just hard to remake them and then do it right. That's always the concern with these kinds of, like Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You're a big Star Wars fan.
I am.
How do you think they're doing as they keep going? Because it almost feels like they're spreading this franchise out so far.
Right.
How can they keep making great movies?
It's just because they have such great characters that they can rely on the characters alone to have a movie.
Lauren,
for like all of them.
Did you get Disney Plus just so you could watch Mandalorian?
Absolutely.
You should have spoken up during the business lunch hour.
I didn't want to go all nerd on you.
Oh,
it would have been
loved
she does
it.
Go all nerd. It just it gets there really easily. Like Baby
yeah,
Yoda,
yeah,
she's like, oh, you know, she knows the whole backstory.
Talk about Baby Yoda.
I know.
Too?
Once you mentioned the Build-A-Bear, I was like, oh,
Lauren, next time,
will
don't
I stand
hold
in
back.
Line?
And make sure you celebrate two things today, guys. Before we wrap up here, I just want to mention two things. It's Tom Skilling's birthday. He's ageless, as we know. We love Tom, and it's also he shares a birthday with Charles Barkley and Cindy Crawford.
Oh,
it's also
not
cherry,
the same year.
I think it's Cherry Pie Day
cherry
and
pie day.
Appreciate Your Pet Day.
National Love Your Pet Day is on the list, and National Cherry Pie Day too.
So
I prefer apple pie, but cherry is okay.
Eat a
I might have
of
one
cherry pie and pet your dog or cat.
Yeah,
or fluffy bunny or your pet parakeet.
Whatever your choice of pet is.
What do you do to appreciate your pet? I think I do every day. I love my pet. My
the
little
pet
dog
is should be. So mean to me.
And I still love her.
You have
her.
A cat.
Yeah, she's awful.
Aww.
What do you do for your cat on a day like today?
She's the weird thing is I'll just give her extra treats.
Okay.
You know, she's gorgeous, though. She's very sweet, but she's super sassy. It's just whenever she wants to be nice. It's all
this
on her
terms. This is cats for you, G. This is what you sign up for when you get the
you
cat.
Know, though, I love it. I like the abuse.
Oh, gosh. That's a whole nother, the whole nother segment we'll get to. That's it for us here. We're going to check in with Rokan at the top of the hour and see what's coming up on his show and also get the news here on WGN, top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.